Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janaballava Giri Varadari Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janaballava Giri Varadari Yashoda Nanana Raja Jana Ranjana Raja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Manachari Jamuna Tira Manachari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janna Ballava Giri Varadari Yashoda Nanana Raja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nanana Raja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vandachari Jamuna Tira Vandachari Giri Govardhan, Giri Govardhan, Giri Govardhan, Jai Giri Govardhan. Jai Krishna Balaram, Jai Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jai Krishna Balaram. Radhesham, Jai Radhesham Nitai Gaur Haribo 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 Nitai Gaur Haribo Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pada Paramahansa Parvata Kacharya Ashtakam Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad-Bhagavatam, 10th canto, Rukmini's message to Krishna. We're still kind of finishing up a little bit about Muchakunda in these next couple of verses. I'll be reading text 2 and 3. We can read the Sanskrit for both of them, and then we'll go back to discussing. You can repeat after me. Samviksha-kshulakan marjan. Pashun virud vanapspatin. Matva kaliyugam praptam. Nagama jisham uttaram. Samviksha kushuka kam marjan. Pashun virud vanaspatin. Matva kaliyugam praptam. Jagama disham uttaram. Please chant. Questions? Samviksha, noticing, Shulakan, tiny, Marjan, the human beings, Pashun, animals, Viru, plants, Vanaspatin, and trees, Matva, considering, Kali Yugam, the age of Kali, Praptam, having arrived, Jagama, he went, Nisham, to the direction, Uttaram, north. Translation. Seeing that the size of all the human beings, animals, trees, and plants was severely reduced, and thus realizing that the age of Kali was at hand, Muchakunda left for the north. Purport. There are several significant words in this verse. A standard Sanskrit dictionary gives the following English meanings for the word shulaka: little, small, low, vile, poor, indigent, wicked, malicious, abandoned, hard, pained, distressed. These are the symptoms of the age of Kali, And all these qualities are said here to apply to men, animals, plants, and trees in this age. We who are enamored of ourselves and our environment can perhaps imagine the superior beauty and living conditions available to people in former ages. The last line of this text, Jagama Dishan Utaram, he went toward the north, can be understood as follows. By traveling north in India, one comes to the world's highest mountains, the Himalayan range. There, one can still find many beautiful peaks and valleys where there are quiet hermitages suitable for austerity and meditation. Thus, in Vedic culture, going to the north indicates renouncing the comforts of ordinary society and going to the Himalayan mountains to practice serious austerities for spiritual advancement. Text 3. You can say the Sanskrit with me. Tapakshada yuto dhiro nishango mukta samshaya samadhaya manakshishne pravishad ghandamadhanam. Translation. The sober king, beyond material association, free of doubt, was convinced of the value of austerity. Absorbing his mind in Lord Krishna, he came to Gandhamadana Mountain. Purport. The name Gandhamadana indicates a place of delightful fragrances. Undoubtedly, Gandhamadana was filled with the aroma of wild flowers and forest honey and with other natural scents. Reminds me when I was in Spain one time, where actually we took a hike on a mountain and you could actually smell the herbs. There were so many of them. Also in South India, at one of our temples there's a forest, and we went walking for 10 hours and getting lost. But you could smell all the different herbs and things. You don't really get that experience around here. But there are still some places like that. So here we're having Muchakunda get the instructions of Lord Krishna to go and to purify himself. And so he's taking off to the north. In those days, it meant to this Himalayan range where it was very, very peaceful. And in the purport, it's describing that it's hard for us to imagine such a place, especially since we're so enamored with what we think of ourselves as being so great. Somehow or other, this is so true. I mean, I'm sure all of us can find something within ourselves that we're enamored with, that we think we're so great in, maybe two or three things. I'm sure we all have something we think, yes, I'm so great. Unfortunately, this is the situation that we are so easily flattered and praised that our ego just gets so out of hand. It inflates beyond the ordinary realms. So this is it's unfortunate for us to actually think that it might be someone even better than ourselves. And then it expands. It goes to think that, oh, actually our society, this nation is actually the best. Americans are the greatest, right? Everyone loves us. No. And I think there was a book called The Ugly American. It was written at one time. And I know I go to other countries sometimes and I'm kind of embarrassed to be an American because many people just don't have the same enamorment that we have of ourselves. And that's true of their nations also. They're thinking they're the best. The French think they're the best. The Pakistanis. So this is this false ego, this inflated false ego, is such a shame. It reminds me of that story we just read about Jarasandha. You know, he was thinking he was real great. He had wanted to fight Lord Krishna, finally got a really good battle, and he was defeated 17 times. But each time when he came back, a little bit of flattering, a little bit of praise, and although he was smashed, somehow or other, put himself back together, thinking he was great again, and went out there to get smashed again. So this is the goal of those with that problem. And we all have that problem in some degree or another. Also, the problem is that our social leaders and scientists, things like that, they boast so much that we're so great, that we actually become convinced of that. But Prabhupada said, you know, what is this, you know, this great technology, you know, this scientific technology, thinking you're going to get more comforts, less work, more comforts, now that we're so advanced. What have we got? And Prabhupada says, we get the atom bomb. which is going to ultimately destroy everything. And so Prabhupada says, what about advanced consciousness? How about that? Have we gotten that? That can benefit the whole world, not destroy it. So this is the direction that we should go, rather than the direction that we're being pulled into. And that is this Kali Yuga, which is described here with some pretty depressing words, wicked, malicious, pain, but it's true. These are some of the symptoms. It's a plummeting of all of our standards of life and our good qualities. This Kali Yuga is just making us become so degraded in every direction. And for those of us who have been around for a while, we've seen it in our small lifetime very vividly. And other people, too, have actually have admitted to this. So-called advancement is not being so great. These are some quotes from some leaders of the country. One of them is, for 200 years, we've been conquering nature. Now we're beating it to death. Another one. Modern technology owes ecology an apology. The sun, moon, and stars would have disappeared long ago had they happened to be within the reach of predatory human hands. And some by Prabhupada. You create some comfort, and you create some greater danger also. For some fictitious happiness, you lose your whole purpose of life. So this is the direction of those who are being sucked in with this Kali Yuga. 12th canto, if you go there, it's also a vivid description of what's to come. Now we're progressing a little, a few hundred thousand years into Kali Yuga, but there's worse to come. In the 12th canto, it describes that the goal of life will be what? To fill the belly. And that hypocrisy will be considered a virtue. And that success in business will be based on deceit. Beauty will be determined by your hairstyle. And leaders will all be bandits. And atheism will be common. And the law and justice will all be according to one's power. So these are some of the things that are expected to happen. Obviously happening now. I mean, who can't see it? I mean, when I say all those things, you can probably think of an incident of a leader doing this and of hypocrisy this just recently within the last very small part of our lifetime. It's increasing all the time. So it's going on, but we become numb to it. Just like when you go to the dentist, right? They give you Novocaine, and you go home for about an hour or so, and you're just fine, and then all of a sudden, it wears off, right? And you wake up and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, it's not so great after all. So we're numb to this. The prices of gas are going from, I remember 28 cents when I became a devotee, it was 28 cents a gallon. And then it got to, a dollar, and then we think $2, $3. We get kind of numb to, okay, now it's $4. Oh, that's back down to $3. Great, wonderful. You know, and same with our different things going on in society. And different standards that have become degraded. Food, inflation, all these different things, they're getting worse and worse, but we just kind of get numb to it. Until finally, with a little bit of intelligence and the help of Bhagavatam, the spiritual master, we go, wait a second. You know, what is going on here? We should do something about it. Here it's describing, this stress. People are somewhat jolted, a little bit woken up, and they realize, why am I in such stress? And they're trying to figure out what to do. Actually, I went down to the college in Ocala a week or so ago, and I talked to one girl, and I said, what do you study? And she goes, well, actually, right now I'm studying stress. I go, great. How to get stress? How to get rid of stress? There's actually a course at the school just on stress. I talked to another person who takes a nursing course, and it's required. You have to take a course all about stress because everyone is under stress. What to do about it? And I asked her, I said, well, what are some of the things they tell you to do to get rid of it? And then she said a few things, yoga, meditation, things like that. And I said, give me the name of your teacher, invite us to come here, and we'll tell you how through music, sound vibration, you can get rid of so much stress. I didn't have anything to write down, so I forgot the name of the teacher. I'm trying to go back. It'd be really nice to give that class. We should give that class in all the colleges, because it is such a problem. And this is summed up in Srimad Bhagavatam in a very nice verse. It says, the suffering of human society are due to polluted aim of life, namely lording it over material resources. The more human society engages in the exploitation of undeveloped material resources for sense gratification, the more it will be entrapped by the illusory material energy of the Lord. And thus the distress of the world will be intensified instead of diminished. So this is a problem. You know, our ego trying to get more than we deserve. Actually, just like she was quoting it to this man, you know, you're being a thief. You're taking all these things more than your quota from Krishna. So this is an ongoing problem, and people are trying to find some, you know, quick fix for their distress, quick fix for Kali Yuga, and only more or less making it worse. They want to stay numb, so therefore they take intoxications and drugs and all these kind of things. They try to keep in this illusion, so they convince themselves, like Jarasandha, that everything's okay. But the more intelligent people will see that I need a real solution to the problem, something that will give a solution to the birth, the death, the disease, and the old age, what less the adibodhic, adidaivic, adiatmic, troubles with the mind, troubles with the nature, trouble with other people. So this, we understand, can be found only by engaging in a change of consciousness, changing our consciousness from this exploitative material consciousness, trying to gratify our body, and start to learn the art of bhakti, or giving, and especially giving it all back to Krishna, because that's where we came from, to recognize that it's not all about me, it's actually all about Krishna. So this is what was actually quite prevalent in other ages, in Satya Yuga and ages like that. It's describing here that they couldn't imagine, you know, that it was in former ages actually like this. And it's hard for us to realize that. But it came to my mind that, you know, they actually had a beautiful place. They had these gorgeous places to live in without the stress and everything. And like Muchakunda here is going to go in meditation. Who would need to meditate if you have such a nice thing? I mean, people here go on retreats to try to have a nice, peaceful place to meditate. But here they're already God conscious and meditating, but what? Why do they have to go do this for hundreds of years? And that's because they were super intelligent, and they could realize that the real solution, the long-term solution, even, you know, just to this birth, death, and disease age, has to be that I'm going to now actually just revive my total consciousness of Krishna, connect to him, and to finish up my business. So they even realize that even this peacefulness and, you know, less anxiety is not the ultimate perfection of human life. That the real goal of human life is to connect back with Krishna in a loving mood, just to serve him, to have Krishna just on our mind and nothing else. So therefore, we find that these temples are now the north, going to the north, going to this shelter, learning how to change our consciousness. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada has established these temples, these oases, where we can get ourselves away and from the material energy and try to absorb ourselves in the spiritual life. And of course, we learn austerity here. Surely it isn't easy, giving up illicit sex and intoxication, meat eating, all these things. It's not easy. But there are great benefits. Just like today, I was looking around the temple and wondering where our new Bhakta was, and I didn't see him. It's just that I didn't recognize him because he didn't have his hair. And so it's described that, you know, that austerity, that, you know, this bodily consciousness of hair in this age, you know, is going to be your beauty. So here we're asking devotees, they're volunteering actually to shave their head and to take up some of this austere life. But you know what? That actually Radharani noticed, I'm sure, this morning, this is going to be my best devotee. Just see, he's taken up this process. So this is very nice. This whole process is so nice that gradually we can give up this false ego that is just keeping us here in the material world. It's not that the materialists aren't doing austerity. I mean, we need austerity, like we're trying to promote, but to help attract Krishna to us. But materialists, they undergo all kinds of austerity. We find that much more austere for me to have to wake up early, sit in traffic, go work for 8 to you know, how many hours they work in a closed environment, not even knowing what's going on outside. Misery. If you ask me, that would be total misery. So some of them, what do? They work a couple jobs, right? So they can get more amenities. We call them anarthas. More things that they don't need. So much austerity they perform. But what? Just simply for their sense gratification. Simply to entangle them more. Make the knot, pull a knife, knot just a little tighter. And so they can rot in their knot right here in the material world. So we have a different purpose. We like Muchukunda here, he's actually going to the north for purification. And this is nice because he's actually getting the direct instructions from Krishna to do this. And in our temples, we also are getting direct instruction on what austerities we should perform. We're not just concocting something. Like some of these materialists, they have these ideas of all these strange, you know, things, so much education and going in debt, all of these things. Sometimes they're forced to do all these austerities, but the direction isn't proper. So we have the proper direction. And we will get the proper goal in time. But it does take some time. So we have to be patient that the effects will be there. In the Vedic literature, austerity comes up a lot. You hear about it. But a lot of it's the demons. They do austerity, staying on the tips of their toes. Or we heard yesterday on the tips of their big toes, you know. Trying to get power and more control. So this is the same old ego trip, even though it was in Vedic times, it was still going on. But then we hear of Mother Yasoda, of Devaki and Vasudeva, of the gopis all doing austerity. But for what? To have Krishna as their son, to have Krishna as their lover. So this is a whole different flavor that we should to develop somehow or other to please Krishna. And if we have the instructions of what we should do, like chanting the holy name, this is the instructions of Lord Chaitanya, that in this age of Kali, the best way to defeat him is to chant these holy names. We did a play in the ashram of the Kali, and we anger went out and tried to, it was prevalent throughout the material world, being angry at this and that. And then he ran into a devotee. And he came back. I remember the lion saying, "Yeah." And I tried to do this. He came back to report how he was doing in Kali Yuga with his anger. And he says, "But then I ran into Vodi, and he gave me a cookie, and now I can't be angry anymore." So actually, this movement of prasadam distribution, so many different things, it gives Kali a good fight. It gives him a run for his money. So we have to realize that everything that we're told to do in Krishna consciousness, this austerities that we perform, it does have effect. And this age of Kali, it doesn't have to progress in that direction, Prabhupada said. I remember I was in Mayapur, that actually the Sankirtan movement can deter this age of Kali. But it's difficult. We have a lot of distractions. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada recommended that we make these temples very sublime, great places of education, get the knowledge, which also brings that light out in this darkness, understanding what we should do, and also to make the availability of farms so that they can have this peaceful atmosphere. It's very important. It's very difficult to pull yourself away from the city life and everything and to be able to meditate for very long. And maybe they do for a little bit of time, but then, poof, it goes away. So Prabhupada encouraged us in this simple living. Why? So that we have more time for Krishna consciousness, so that we have a little bit of peace of mind, so that we're not distracted, and we actually have these farm communities and our own contained environment working inside. He really encouraged for devotees to have their own businesses and to work within each other's businesses to create our own society, to make a model, an ideal model of what it's like to have this beautiful God-conscious centered environment where one can begin to break down the habits and to begin to break down all the distractions of the mind so that we can actually think of Krishna, so we can actually really meditate and become purified. It's a struggle. It's a struggle even within our Krishna consciousness movement. Even within our Krishna consciousness movement, we're numb to many things. Now the standard of our children living together unmarried, it's become like whatever, it's just the norm. Boys and girls just living together in family, they get married and have their Vedic ceremony, but this isn't what the standard is, but we kind of more or less accepted it. So we have to realize that we have to develop this Krishna consciousness a very strong model so that the world out there is enamored by us, so that they see, wow, this is really working. And so therefore we have to work very hard. And Prabhupada encouraged us to have this, you don't want to hear it, but varnashram system, and to have simple living and high thinking. And he expected us to do it and to preach it, that we can't do it. We can't preach it unless we're doing it. So we need to realize that our real austerity, one of our other austerities, is to actually to do this, to actually learn how to live simply and how to live together and cooperate, and how to learn trading between us and cooperation between us. Very difficult. It's so much easier just to do our own thing. To live in our own house, get our own food, get our own, our own little job, and make our own little money, and have our own little, program. Much easier. It's so difficult to work with other people, even in Krishna consciousness. But this is the ideal society that actually Prabhupada wants us to develop. And it's a lot of hard work for us. Many of our communities haven't made it, but I did see just yesterday that I think Hawaii and also Canada has a nice program encouraging people with the like-mindedness of living simply and trying to have this cooperative type of community. They were begging people, anyone that has that kind of consciousness, please come join us. We're going to do it right this time. And we're going to learn how not to, like it says here, to take all these resources for ourselves, but we're going to learn how to actually use them in Krishna's service and how to rebuild them, how to learn not to just, be predators, not to be just consumers, but how to be productive. And that's what Prabhupada really was so encouraged when he saw New Vrindavan producing so much milk, so many vegetables and things like that. It's a society that we really need to promote and to develop. So, people say, but it's too difficult. It's not possible in this age. We're too conditioned. So for some, maybe it will work. If not, maybe Krishna will force us. Maybe he'll have to force us. He'll put a big dam on the current of our sense gratification so that we have to stop for a minute and re-evaluate what we're doing and re-evaluate how to do it properly. There's something I'd like to read. I found it on my Facebook yesterday. Maybe some of you already had it, but I kind of got a kick out of it. But it has to do with this, especially of the age of Kali and even how it was just a little bit ago. You know, now we have this, it's called the Green Revolution. We're trying to put those Band-Aids on, try to fix everything now that we've made a mess of things. So this is what I found. Checking out at the store, the young cashier suggested to the older woman that she should bring her own grocery bags because plastic bags weren't good for the environment. The woman apologized and explained, "We didn't have this green thing back in my earlier days." The young clerk responded, "That's our problem today. Your generation did not care enough to save our environment for future generations." She was right. Our generation didn't have the green thing in its day. Back then, we used to return milk bottles, soda bottles, and beer bottles to the store. The store sent them back to the plant to be washed and sterilized and refilled so it could use the same bottles over and over. So they really were truly recycled, but we didn't have the green thing back in our day. Grocery stores bagged our groceries in brown paper bags that we reused for numerous things. Most memorable, besides household garbage bags, we used the use of brown paper bags as book covers for our school books. But too bad, we didn't have the green thing back then. We walked upstairs because we didn't have an escalator in every store and office building. We walked to the grocery store and didn't climb into a 300 horsepower machine every time we had to go two blocks. But she was right, we didn't have the green thing in our day. Back then, we washed the baby's diapers because we didn't have the throwaway kind. We dried clothes on a line, not an energy gobbling machine burning up 220 volts, wind and solar power really didn't dry our clothes back in our early days. Kids got hand-me-down clothes from their brothers and sisters, not always brand new clothing. But that young lady is right. We didn't have the green thing in our day. In the kitchen, we blended and stirred by hand because we didn't have electric machines to do everything for us. When we packaged a fragile item to send in the mail, we used wadded-up old newspapers to cushion it, not styrofoam or plastic bubble wrap. Back then, we didn't fire up an engine and burn gasoline just to cut the lawn. We used a push mower that ran on human power. We exercised by working, so we didn't need to go to a health club to run on treadmills that operate on electricity. But she's right. We didn't have the green thing back then. We drank from a fountain when we were thirsty instead of using a cup or a plastic bottle every time we had to drink water. We refilled writing pens with ink instead of buying a new pen. And we replaced razor blades in a razor instead of throwing away the whole razor just because the blade got dull. We didn't have the green thing back then. Back then, people took the streetcar or bus, and kids rode their bikes to school or walked instead of turning their moms into 24-hour taxi service. We had one electrical outlet in the room, not an entire bank of sockets to power a dozen appliances. And we didn't need a computerized gadget to receive a signal beamed from satellites 23,000 miles away out in space to order to find the nearest veggie burger joint. So, but now we have the green thing because we made a lot of messes. And so can we maybe go back and do things a little bit better, you know, and promote it and make a model of how we could do it right, and especially on how to change our consciousness from thinking of just ourselves, being enamored just with ourselves and our own little program, and how we can realize that Krishna will be enamored with us if we simply follow the direction of our spiritual master, Śrīla Prabhupāda, who wants us to live a simple life and to think very highly and to encourage other people to do that. Anybody have anything else they'd like to say? Back there to the front, please.
Sense Muchukunda is also thinking like this. Look at all these midget now. Back in his days, he came from the dynasty of Ikshvaku. They were Ikshvaku is in Treta Yuga. That's 14 cubits. over 21 feet tall. They used to use gold plate and so many different things then. So in one sense, he's also seen how things have changed tremendously. And that's why he decided to go and meditate. The other point is Gandhamadana. The regions of Gandhamadana were inhabited by the Gandharvas. In the previous ages, the Gandharvas, they used to reside on the earthly planet, or at least have it as like a playground. Some of the demigods used to reside in the Himalayan regions also in the previous ages. In this age, that's not possible.
Good luck. Yeah, she's probably too young.